Welcome to episode number 6 of Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galena, and as always, I'm joined by one of the brightest minds in fantasy baseball, Mr. Scott Chu. How's it going, Scott?
I'm doing great. It's easily the nicest thing anyone has said about me in terms of my fantasy analysis, but I'm going to take it. I am not in a position to turn away compliments, Joe. That's not where I'm at yet.
Yeah, you know, I've learned that sometimes when someone compliments you, I've always been very reluctant to accept it. But every once in a while, you just have to say, okay, thank you. And that's it. Just move on, right? So
I'd love to be in a place where I'm getting so many that I can turn them away, push them, you know, like, oh, I've got so many, I'm overflowing with compliments. Please take some back. I'm not there. That's not where I'm at, Joe.
Well, I'm going to try to give you a compliment at least once a week. Okay. So you got one coming, you know, at least when we do this podcast together. So we're counting down the days to the start of the baseball season there, Scott. Any opening day traditions in the Chu household?
Not so much in the household. I'm the only one in the house that's like big into professional baseball. The only tradition I really have is begging my boss for at least half a day off so that I can watch as many games as possible. And then over the last couple of years, jumping in that PL Plus Discord, plug, have a lot of fun in there. Everyone's super excited. We've got hundreds of people in there just talking baseball all day. Every single thing that happens, every dropped ball, every nasty pitch, every hard hit, like we're all over it. So it's really fun to just hang out in there and hear what everyone's saying about baseball that day. Cause I can't have eyes on all games, right?
Sure. But
there, at least 5 people are on each one. So it's a ton of fun.
Yeah. This is my first year with Pitcherless and I'll be there as well. And, you know, it's like a national holiday opening day. And especially there's so much hope because we're going to get 162 game season this year. So I'm playing in 6 fantasy leagues this season. And I bet that you're playing in a ton more there, Scott.
Yeah, it's enough to where I don't have a number for you.
Good.
I know that I have 6 drafts starting this afternoon till Sunday night. But I'm already in a bunch of other leagues other than that. So, like, it's a problem. It's one that I really need to, like, reflect on personally because I'm addicted. It's just I can't say no to starting, like, to getting into new leagues. And, you know, that's okay. Every year I say I'm going to get in fewer, and then I end up with more. It's just I'm sure a lot of people out there can appreciate that feeling. But you say, I'm going to have fewer leagues this year. And all of a sudden, I've got 3 more than I did before. And I didn't drop any. So here we are.
There you go. So just as a reference point, we're recording this podcast on Saturday morning, March 27th, and it breaks on Monday. So I'm going to try to find another league because, look, I love to draft. And, hey, look, it didn't work out this way for me this season, but I prefer to draft as close to opening day as possible. And with all the breaking injury news from last week, I think that scheduling your drafts as close to opening day as possible is definitely a smart thing to do. Of course, with so many leagues featuring slow drafts these days, Scott, that's not always possible.
Yeah, I mean, slow drafts are great because they accept the reality that most of us, especially if you've got friends across different time zones, different parts, you know, in different phases of their life, it's hard to get everyone together for 2 or 3 hours, right? It's really difficult, especially if you're doing like an auction where you're looking at more like 4 hours at times. So it's difficult. If you can do a fast draft, be it, you know, in person or just through draft software, it is really nice to be able to do it close to opening day so that you don't look back on, you know, your slow draft team and be like, oh, wow, you know, 3 of my top 10 picks are now out for at least a month. You know, there's a lot of people that are in TGFBI lamenting their pick of Eloy Jimenez. And it was a great pick at the time. You wouldn't even make it now. And that's what's tough. But also, the one advantage of those slow drafts, I will say, other than the convenience, is you can get some bargains, right? If you were in on a guy early, you can get, you know, those earlier drafts, you get great bargains on some of those players that at this point are now super hyped.
Right.
You know, especially, you know, guys that were fighting for jobs that you just always believed in. If you had a really early draft, you know, that started in early February and you were in on Shohei Ohtani and you got in there, like his draft prices raised a ton, right? Or like CJ Cron.
Yes.
You were in on CJ Cron early. His ADP has jumped by like 150 points.
Yeah.
You know,
he's
so
like you get him now 10 rounds earlier than you would have a month ago. Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the one advantage. They end up offsetting each other a bit, But, you know, I'd say the slow draft one feels more painful because what you're usually what's usually happening is you're losing early picks that are no longer like going to play and you're trying to get that value back. And like CJ Krohn can't replace Eloy. Right.
Right.
Like
right.
Even if you got a great bargain, you got him 15 rounds ahead of his 80 or behind his ATP. That's great. Like mm-hmm. that doesn't replace Eloy. So
right.
We'll talk a little bit more about how you can do that later. Mm-hmm. Sort of, to an extent. There is no replacing a guy like that, but
no,
you know, it's
unfortunately
pros
not.
And cons.
Mm-hmm. And just another comment regarding slow drafts and live drafts. I mean, sometimes you get so used to doing these slow drafts and you have the time to actually do your research in between your picks and whatnot. I was in a 15-teamer the other night, and we were drafting live for 3.5-4 hours. By the end of that draft, I was exhausted. You know, I just wasn't used to doing that anymore.
It's endurance, you know, yeah. Just like running, you know, you gotta build up that endurance. And with slow drafts, you're right. I mean, you get plenty of time to research, to haggle, to decide what you want to do. Think about, oh, you know, who do I think my league mates are going to pick before my next pick? I can't do that so much in the fast ones, right? Like you have to be researching the entire time. If you want to be able to do that, you got to be building queues the entire time. Instead of just like, oh, I'm going to build a queue and then ignore this for 12 hours.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about some of the major injury news that took place within the past week. And again, as a reference point, like I said earlier, we're recording this on March 27th. So if anything new happens in terms of these injuries, forgive us. But there was one, and we were talking about before the show, Fernando Tatis, who was removed from Tuesday's game after he injured his shoulder while attempting to make a backhanded defensive play. And maybe I'm overreacting, but this one scared me, and I think it should scare anyone who rosters him in a dynasty league, because according to Padres manager Jace Tingler, he's been experiencing some left shoulder discomfort off and on for the past few years. And Tingler, he says that Tatis has a good feel for when it gets bad and when it's not too bad. Now, the good news is that Tatis was able to play. He's been DHing the past couple of days. Actually, I think he hit a home run on Friday night. But I had no idea that he had, I don't know if I should call it a chronic shoulder issue, but this is news to me.
And it was news to me, too. In fact, I didn't hear about it until you mentioned it before the show today, which is terrifying. And on one hand, that does give me concern. Right? Anyone with recurring joint issues, like those things don't always get better, right? Like I'm not a pro athlete. I don't have a pro trainer, but once my ankle started getting weird, it just stayed weird. Mm-hmm. Like it never really got better. It didn't matter how much I braced it, iced it, whatever. And I can manage it, but it's weird now. Like I just have a bad ankle at times. And hopefully that's not what Tatis is going through. He's 10 years younger than me, and I'm sure he's very spry and quick to heal, unlike myself, but it worries me a little in Dynasty, but not enough for me to move him anywhere, right? Because he's to me one, there's three different guys you could have at the top of your Dynasty ranks between like him, Acuna, Soto. Mm-hmm. If you want to like shuffle them around slightly, like go for it, but who cares, right? Like he's still a number one, a top tier dynasty asset. If you want to call him number one, I don't think anyone will begrudge you. I actually have him in a dynasty league, and he's the only guy that's not on the table, because I told people that you would never want to pay what I would ask you for. Mm-hmm. You know, he's that level of talent. For this season, again, we've only heard this from the manager, and the reason I'm not super concerned yet is because he hasn't missed any time. And quite frankly, if this is how he plays with a bum shoulder, so be it.
Right?
Like, so be it. I'll worry about this 5-10 years from now if it's never gotten better, but it's never really cost him any time mm-hmm. so far, you know, through the minors, into the majors. And, you know, it doesn't even impact his defense. He's one of the best defensive shortstops in baseball. Like, the guy's an incredible athlete. And at least in the short term, I think we can just assume that he is managing it well. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, even if it's holding him back a little, like that's really for the good of his opponents, right? Like mm-hmm. he almost needs a handicap because he's incredible defensively, incredible offensively.
Yes.
And, you know, if he's playing with a bit of a bum shoulder, like that just gives everyone else a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I'll say is during the regular season, if he's forced to miss time, let's say for a couple of days while, you know, he's recuperating from a little discomfort, no DH in the NL. So he's going to be sitting. You know, he could pinch hit, of course, and whatnot. And the other thing that worries me is if I'm a dynasty manager who rosters him is that, you know, God forbid one of these years where it develops into something where, hey, finally, you know, you've been putting this off. You need to have surgery. And then he's out for a year. But I agree with you otherwise. Guy hit a home run on Friday night, has been able to bat since the little injury on Tuesday night. But it's just something to keep in the back of your mind. So you mentioned Juan Soto, and now Juan Soto was removed from Thursday night's game against the Marlins after experiencing what the Nationals are calling a cramp in his right calf. And Soto was expected to receive treatment. And I don't see a timeline for him coming back. Doesn't sound like it's anything too serious. Wasn't in the lineup on Friday night. Maybe because I'm a Yankee fan and I've been dealing with Giancarlo Stanton and I've owned shares of Josh Donaldson, but calf injuries sometimes scare me.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, the first thing I wonder is, like, what is the treatment for a cramp? Like, chugging Gatorade? What is – I don't know what that treatment looks like. I'm sure there's something fancy they have, but when it happens to me, it's like, here's some Gatorade, sit down for a while. But, again, I understand what the Nationals are doing, because if Juan Soto told me something hurt,
yeah,
and it was right before the start of the season, and my team's ability to compete is – sketchy at best, right? It's a deep division now. What am I doing? I'm protecting the, like, one of the best pure hitters in baseball.
Sure.
Who is, you know, at this point, you know, he's one of the most valuable assets in, you know, as far as, like, hitting in baseball, right? Just, like, across the league, he's, I keep using this word, he's incredible. Him and Tatis, I'll use that word, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Generational type talents. So I don't mind that they're playing it conservative. The fact that there's no timeline yet, I guess, doesn't really matter to me. There's still quite a while before opening day.
Right.
Would it really matter if he sat for 3 days if he was going to be fine opening day?
I'd rather him sit, anything, right, than having to miss a long period of time.
It almost feels like, you know, this is the phase of the season where, at least in terms of spring, it's kind of like week four of the NFL preseason, where, like, guys are going to sit if anything bothers them. Like, it's like, if they're gassy, the team will consider, like, should we sit him? Should we make sure he's comfortable? Right? Like, that's where we're at. So I'm less concerned about some of this stuff. Like, oh, we removed him from the game. Cause, like, they're not trying to win, right? Like, they're not trying to win spring training games. It doesn't really matter. So you're going to see this more. I'm going to be worried when I start hearing about, like, going to see a specialist, partially torn something, hairline fracture something. Like, that's concerning, but, like, a calf cramp, like, okay, you know, let me know if anything develops.
You mentioned Eloy Jimenez, and for those who don't know, he's going to be out for 5 to 6 months and suffered a ruptured left pectoral tendon. Going to need surgery, and it's kind of silly the way that this happened. Tried to rob a home run from Sean Murphy on the A's in an exhibition game. So you kind of wonder, you know, why he felt the need to try to, you know, rob Sean Murphy of a home run. Maybe he's just taking all those criticisms of his defense a little bit too much to heart. But I guess the fallout, like you said, there's really no replacing a guy like Eloy Jimenez. But what the White Sox are doing right now is they're giving their rookie Andrew Vaughn, who is a natural first baseman, and was supposed to be their DH for much of the season. And they've given him reps in left field. And according to Tony La Russa, for the rest of spring training, that's where you'll see him. And he played last night, went 1-for-4 as a left fielder. And when I say last night, I talk about Friday night.
Yeah. And so, I mean, two pieces of news here. Number one, I don't mind that he was trying hard in spring. I mean, he would be trying that in the regular season. Might as well give it a try now. Unfortunate that it, you know, tears his pec and he's going to miss a bunch of time, essentially takes him off of the radar for draft season for us. Yes. Really difficult to replace him. The White Sox are lucky. They have a very deep lineup and might be able to work their way through this. One of the ways they'll do that is a guy like Andrew Vaughn. Now, I feel like I'm such a wet blanket on Andrew Vaughn because I don't have the same level of excitement. Like, I still don't have, you know, if you look at my ranks, which I just updated on Pitcher List, I updated every single hitter rank, added a ton of notes for a bunch of guys that are looking at different situations than they were just a few weeks ago. And I still don't have Andrew Vaughn inside my top 20 at first base. And the reason is because the track record of players who go from, like, 60 games in rookie and A ball to the major leagues is basically zero. We don't see this. And I know that Vaughn was an advanced prospect and that he had an advanced hit tool, but like for him to be successful, like I can name one player who's been successful playing. And this guy even played in Double A, right? Like that's Juan Soto, right? Like that's it. That's a generational type talent. I'm not saying Vaughn can't do that. I'm saying if you bet against it, the odds are probably more in your favor. I think that he can be good, but this is not a guy with like 30 home run power. I think Vaughn is a 20 to 25 home runs if he can play the full season, and his batting average is really going to depend on how well he adapts to major league breaking stuff. I think this kid can hit the fastballs. No doubt about it. He saw big fastballs even in A-ball, right? He saw them in college. He hasn't seen the sliders and the curves and the changeups that you get in the big leagues. Like that's one of the biggest adjustments for young players. Even Vlad Guerrero has struggled with this, right? Vlad Guerrero Jr., one of the most hyped prospects that we've had in a long time. I still think he can be successful, but that's where the transition is, learning to hit those pitches. I mean, like this site pitcher list exists because of how nasty those pitches can be, right? Yep. Like we post gifts of them all the time. They're disgusting. And as a young 20-something year old player, you've not seen that from the batter's box. At least, and certainly if you have seen it, you have not seen it multiple times in the same at bat, right? So that's going to be a big transition. That's why I'm not drafting him as like a starting first baseman in a 12-team league. But I think he's interesting as like a corner guy. If you want to, if you can get him late enough, which you probably can't at this point. I liked him as a flyer, but man, the helium is up so much that I'm not out on him. I just know someone will take him before I'm ready to.
Yeah, I was looking. He's rostered in 42% of Yahoo leagues. And I agree with you. I don't think he's a top 12 first baseman. I consider him as a utility player, maybe a corner infielder. But now you have to wonder, Yasiel Puig and Yoenis Cespedes, even Josh Reddick, are still available as free agents. You wonder if the White Sox are going to look at them.
You know, I wondered that too. I don't see how Yoenis Cespedes comes back, right? With the weird exit, you know, during the 2020 season where he just disappeared. No one knew where he went. Like, you know, with his age and the fact that he simply hasn't played a significant time in half a decade, I don't see him coming back. Puig would be interesting, but the worst part of Puig, who I did not include in my top 100 outfielders despite his talent, is that we don't hear anything about teams wanting to sign him. We heard that Atlanta was bringing him on, and then he got COVID, right? This happened in the later offseason in 2020. He got COVID, and then radio silence. I've not heard a thing. And I don't know if, if you have, please let me know, on Twitter or whatever, but I don't think there's any news. And so, you might throw him on your watch list if you have like an infinite number of watch list spots, but I wonder if they'll sign a free agent, but I think they'd really like to see what they can get out of guys. Like, even though I think he's hurt right now, Lurie Garcia, they really like as a utility guy. I think the White Sox might very well say, we like our offense even without Eloy for now. So let's just see what we can do with the players that we have. I mean, they still have Jose Abreu. They still have Yasmani Grandal. They still have Luis Robert. I mean, they still have all these guys who can, and Tim Anderson. I mean, they're still very deep in the lineup.
Yes.
They probably feel they can win the AL Central even if they don't get Eloy back till, August, September. And they might be right.
Yeah.
I think they might be right. So they might not do anything, and that wouldn't be a super surprise.
Yep. Replacing 40 home runs that Eloy Jimenez could provide is tough, but I think they are deep enough to weather the storm. And like you said, might be getting him back in September. So keep our fingers crossed for him. And next guy I want to talk about is Zach Gallen, pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So an MRI, a CT scan, X-ray, all confirmed that the forearm soreness that Gallen was experiencing was caused by a hairline fracture in his right forearm. He suffered the injury while swinging a bat. Come on, universal DH, please. All right. Good news, there's no ligament, tendon, or muscle damage, no surgery required. And what's even better is that he's allowed to do some soft tossing, so it's not like he's been totally shut down. But Diamondbacks manager Torey Lovullo basically can't give us a timeline. And you and I were both talking about this before the show in terms of this is kind of like it sounds crazy, but he said that there's no pitcher that's been dealing that has had to deal with a hairline fracture in his forearm. So he really doesn't know how long. I'm thinking weeks.
I mean, it very well could be. So one of the downsides is that he's in the NL. So in theory, he'd have to hold a bat if he got into a start, right? Now, they could just tell him, don't swing,
right,
take the strikeouts. But like, the pitchers are already sort of a nothing burger in terms of offense in the NL. But like, when you literally are just allowing yourself to get a strikeout automatically, like no chance at anything, I think that's a tough sell to a manager and to a team, you know, that it's already a free out, but now it's even more free. Like, he's not even going to make contact kind of thing. So I'm concerned that like, we don't have a comp, because I'm not a doctor. I don't know what this is going to look like. I think this is one where, you know, in terms of drafts and things like that, I mean, if his value is plummeting, I will scoop him up at some point, because I'm not afraid of the unknown necessarily, right? This isn't a thing where it's like, oh, well, we expect him to come back at the All-Star break. This is like I think you're right. I think it's something like, this might be a couple weeks. It might be on the shorter side of that. It might be a 2-week IL stint. It might be a month. That, you know, that's troubling that I don't know. But quite frankly, like, guys get skipped in the rotation all the time early in the season. If a pitcher's going to miss time, I want it to be in early April, because they might have gotten skipped anyway. Right now, it's usually like back end of the rotation guys, but there's all these days off. There's all these like weather cancellations and things like that. It's never good to miss time. If you miss this time, it's probably the least impactful for your team. So at least you can hang your head on that and keep your eyes peeled for news. Like, I haven't done it. I'll probably look up like how hitters come back from hairline fractures. That'll probably tell me the long end of the recovery, because they need it to be fully, like sort of fully healed, so they can start swinging bats again. But, you know, that's less of a concern for a pitcher. So he can probably come back a little earlier, especially that there's no tendon or ligament or muscle damage.
Right.
That's what he really needs to throw. Like, if you throw a baseball a million times, you won't break your arm necessarily. You're going to injure tendons. You're going to injure muscles. You're going to hurt your joints, but like, your bones, like, they're just like, they're moving, but they're not banging against anything. They're not taking force. So I think once he's ready to like catch and throw, maybe swing a few times, like, as long as he's like got enough arm strength to bunt, they'll probably put him back in.
Yeah. And according to reports, he's only really experiencing discomfort when he's throwing his curveball. So, and like you said, I mean, I could deal with a 2-week or 1 month absence, especially for a guy with Gallen's potential there. So hoping he gets back quickly. So George Springer, outfielder for the Blue Jays, had an MRI confirmed that he has a grade 2 oblique strain. I never like to hear about oblique injuries, but the Blue Jays are being optimistic, say that his range of motion is pretty good. Doesn't appear to be a long-term injury, calling him day to day. And I think that they're hoping that he could be ready for opening day.
I think you're right. And they are, it's still trending that way. We haven't gotten any bad news yet since the sprain. Now, a grade 2 sprain, that's like the medium level. There's like grade 1, 2, 3. Grade 2 is the medium level. I'd been hoping that it'd be like lower than that. That'd be a grade 1. That'd be even less of a concern. The thing about core injuries, as you can probably guess, is that it impacts your ability to just sort of move in total. That's why they're talking about his range of motion, because core injuries, like, if you've ever had a core injury, like sore ribs, muscles, like in there, abs, back, like every time you move, those are activated. So it can take a long time for those to get really better, because you can't just like not move that, right? Like, you can't just not move your torso. You got to move it to do like anything. So like, that's a little concerning. I love that we're getting good news. The fact of the matter is, if they put him on the IL for 2-3 weeks, right? Like, the Blue Jays can actually swallow that. They already had Randall Grichuk just sitting on the bench doing nothing, right? Like, they already had a bit of a glut in the outfield. So even if they don't put him on the IL, they may sit him every couple of days. And again, not that concerned. If you drafted George Springer expecting 152 games, like, you were already sort of in the wrong there a little. That's just not what he does. Right. So like, he's still on track for like 140, right? Like, I don't see him missing more than, you know, like half a month's worth of action. So again, now it is something to keep an eye on, because if it gets worse, like a strained oblique can be like a 6 to 8 week thing. Yes. So that's the one big concern. So they're going to take it slow with him. They really want him to be a leadoff hitter in the short term. The one thing I'll say is this gives Kevin Biggio a chance to hit higher in the order than he was currently projected. I think he probably will get to bat a lot of first and second while Springer's out, or anytime he's not in the lineup, even if, you know, Springer's healthy, they might not have him in the lineup that day. It gives Biggio a chance to hit up at the top, gives him more opportunities to prove that he might be able to stay up there, mm-hmm. and maybe they can knock Marcus Semien down. That's not good for Semien's value, but it's great for Biggio. So just something to keep in mind early in the season. I know that Mike Kirkland over at Fantrax, guy I really like, Sleepy K, he tracks these batting orders, and that's what's been happening, is that Biggio's getting that chance higher up in the lineup with Springer out, sort of taking him and Semien are sort of taking the 1-2 spots with Springer out. So that's worth noting, and I think it's going to be really nice early in the season, especially if you're like a DFS person. You know, Biggio gets that bump being at the top of a really good lineup.
Sure. Yep. Next injury we'll talk about hurts me personally because I rostered this guy in two leagues. Kirby Yates was expected to be the Blue Jays' closer this season. He underwent Tommy John surgery on Wednesday. Obviously going to miss the rest of the 2021 season, probably the start of the 2022 season as well. Earlier in the week, Jays manager Charlie Montoyo said that it wasn't likely that there'd be one pitcher that he'd rely on to be the closer in the absence of Yates. But it seems that Jordan Romano, that Peter Walker called him a closer in the making, and then you have Rafael Dolis, who earned 5 saves for them last season. They'll have an opportunity to get some saves. I kind of like Jordan Romano better, but you also have David Phelps and Tyler Chatwood. They could close out some games as well. The one interesting thing, though, I read was that the Braves were set to offer a contract to Yates, but they discovered some elbow issues and they took away the offer. So kind of surprising that the Blue Jays didn't pick up on this. I mean, Yates had some surgery last season to clean out some bone chips, but that's interesting that there was an offer on the table for the Braves that they took away.
Yeah, and it's easy to speculate, like, oh, why didn't the Blue Jays see it? Now, there's a very good chance they did, and their medical opinions were different. Maybe they were willing to take on the risk, right? Like, medicine, it is a science, but there's an art to it, and trying to predict future injury is really, really hard, right? It's not as though he was partially torn and pitching through it, like we saw with, like, Tanaka. It was something where we don't really know exactly what the Braves saw versus what the Blue Jays saw. So, you know, that is an interesting piece. To me, as far as drafts go, again, I like Romano in terms of like the skills. I think he's a better closer, but the one I am willing to draft is whichever of the two goes much later. Romano is the one getting pumped up in drafts to the point where like you really need him to be the most everyday closer. Like he's got to be the closer like 2 out of 3 times to really like get that value that you're drafting. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see that happening, right? It might, right? Because I do like Romano's skills. I think that he's probably good enough for that, but the Blue Jays don't have any reason to need to do that. I think they could very easily look at Dolis as well. I think that if Romano has a bad game, like Dolis is the one coming out the next day, they have no reason to be super faithful to either one of them. So if I need a late closer, which, you know, we talked about in the last episode with the Hacks and Jacks draft for the PL Podcast League, I'm taking late closers, right? Guys that are fighting for the job. And Dolis will probably be one of them that I can get at the very end of the draft. I'll probably ignore Romano where he's gone in leagues that I've seen him drafted in. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing him get picked inside like the top 200. I'm out, right? Like that's too much risk for me in terms of closers who are already super risky in general, right? Yes. You know, our own Alex Fast has talked a lot about how we draft closers wrong. And one of those things is thinking that they're safe closers. Like that's not a thing. Right? Like these are small sample sizes. Like there are guys that are safer than the rest, but like not actually safe. Mm-hmm. So what this does is like, this might pump up some of the last of the full-time closers, like a Ryan Pressly might get drafted just a little bit earlier because guys that were going around him are gone. So there's fewer options. Teams are going to snap him up earlier. Otherwise I'm probably taking Dolis at the end of the draft, as opposed to reaching for Romano in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only, like you mentioned, and a good point with Pressly. But the three top closers that you figure are going to have their jobs all year long unless some catastrophe happens are Josh Hader, Liam Hendricks, and Aroldis Chapman, right? Other than that, there's been so many teams moving towards the closer by committee. And why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't you, with all the data that you have at your fingertips, try to use the pitcher that you think will have the better matchup against a specific situation, right?
No, it's exactly right. I mean, one guy that he wasn't on our little list, I'll bring him up anyway, Nick Anderson, right? So Nick Anderson's out for the season. yeah. Or at least for quite a long time. I don't remember exactly what the timeline was.
I think it's after the question was sort of like,
yeah. So mm-hmm. the question was like, oh, so who's the closer in the meantime? And the thing is, and I mentioned this on a podcast I did Friday with Friends of Fantasy Benefits, the Rays don't know who the closer is going to be in a game until like the seventh inning, right? Trying to play this game of predicting who the closer will be is just silly, because the Rays don't know, because they have no reason to be attached. They have like eight guys who can close games. What was it last year? Six guys got a save in their bullpen last year. It's crazy, right? And like Anderson led the way with 12, and then like five other dudes got saves. So, you know, with the Rays, that's one where I don't want anyone from their bullpen, because I don't think any of them are going to win the job, because the Rays don't need them to. They will play matchups every single time. They're not going to decide whether they want, you know, Peter Fairbanks to close versus Chaz Rowe versus, you know, Diego Castillo. Like, they don't really care. They're going to look at, okay, who's coming up in the ninth? Okay, this is the best matchup based on our analytics, because that's how they win ball games. And this team is trying to win ball games. They're not trying to like give their closer some confidence, because they don't really have one. They don't need one. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep playing those matchups, because that's what that team does. They try to scrap and, you know, sort of like finagle their way into wins. And one of the ways to do that is good bullpen management. It's difficult, but they do a great job at it. And they're not going to have a named closer. They never will. I think you should ignore them all, unless you're in like, you can still take those guys in holds leagues, because they're all eligible to get holds or whatever. And I think they'll all have good ratios. They'll all be good pitchers. They just might not get the save, because the Rays don't care. They don't care about the save at all.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, holds. I mean, I think that, you know, fantasy baseball has to evolve and realize that with the advent of the closer by committee, that maybe they should change that category from just saves to the saves and holds leagues, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of leagues have started to do that. There's a lot of cool strategy. I mean, we have our own stuff over at Pitcher List about how, you know, you can rank guys in saves and holds leagues. I have great lists for that. The one thing I'll say is, number one, in saves and holds leagues, the top tier closers are still the best by a wide margin, right? Mm-hmm. Like, nobody gets 40 holds, right? We just don't see that anymore, especially because like the eighth inning is often by committee, right? Like, we don't have a lot of like pure on the team's only setup guys anymore. You know, those roles have all been broken down a lot more than they used to be. But again, I think, you know, fantasy baseball, we use saves because it's an easy category. I like mm-hmm. saves and holds a lot more, because what are we trying to, you know, what are we trying to capture with saves, right? We're trying to capture good relievers, right? Apart from just their ERA and their whip, like who are good in the high pressure situations? And the fact is, holds are just as high pressure as saves, right? Like, sure, I know the saves the very last inning or whatever, but like holds are just as important, because you need mm-hmm. to be able to get to the ninth inning, right? And that's why teams are, we're seeing more and more teams put their best reliever in the fireman role instead of just the ninth, because they need to come in high pressure situations and get these holds. So I do think leagues should all consider moving to the stat, and all of the major providers offer it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I mean, some of the guys, I'll just throw out some names, because you did a great job last week in drafting closers and relievers in that Hacks and Jacks podcast network draft. You grabbed Daniel Bard, who's going to be the Rockies closer, with basically our last pick. You know, Anthony Bass is supposedly going to be the Marlins closer. Richard Rodriguez is going to be the Pirates closer. Brian Garcia might even get some saves for your Tigers, right? Tanner Scott is going to be closing for the Orioles. Reyes Montbaranta for the Giants might get some saves. I guess the one thing also to note is a lot of these guys I'm just mentioning play for bad teams. So the one thing I think that to note is right around the trade deadline, some of these guys might get traded, especially if these teams are out of contention. And if they've been the original team, their closer, they might not be the closer on the team that they get traded to. So just keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, we see that all the time. I will say that the bigger concern for those guys is less about the trade and more about just being good, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm not worried so much about like Daniel Bard getting traded. I'm more worried that he's going to have a 4.5 ERA and that his saves won't be worth it to me. And I'll have to let him go, right? Like, that's the bigger, like Richard Rodriguez, I'm not drafting because I don't think he's that good, mm-hmm. right? Like, I don't want the saves that bad. So that's the other thing to keep in mind with these closers at the back end. Like, I tend to favor guys who are good pitchers that I'm hoping get a role, as mm-hmm. opposed to guys with a role that I hope will be good pitchers.
Right, right. It's a good strategy. All right, so let's move on. Some of you might be done drafting your fantasy baseball teams, like me, smart listeners to the podcast, drafting right up until opening day, I hope, right? Because opening day is this Thursday, so we've got a few more days. Like I said, I might try to find a new draft to get involved in, but we thought that it might be helpful to identify some of the positional players that might have gone undrafted in your league so far. You know, I mean, we're talking guys, ADPs of 250 and above, that should be on your watch list. And actually, some of the players that we're going to talk about might be worthy of being in your starting lineups, depending on the depth of your league. So, Scott, no matter what platform I've played in, I've always found it very important to create the watch list, or if you play a CBS Sport League, they call it a scout team. Very important, especially with what's going on with baseball today. We're going to get a 162-game season, but COVID's still there. You never know. You might get, you know, a group of players that for contact tracing, they might have been exposed to COVID and what, it's still there. So I think fantasy baseball managers more than ever need to be prepared. You need a safety net this season.
Absolutely. And the other thing is your platform almost certainly is going to sort available players on the waiver wire by one of two ways. They're either going to do it based on like last season numbers or projected full season numbers, or they're going to do it on actual performance, right? The human brain can't just like remember everything. It wants smaller groups than like a full list of players. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about a watch list, especially this early in the season, is guys that like we're excited about in draft season that maybe like just couldn't make it onto your roster because it's like a Yahoo league, 12 teams, no corner, no middle, only three outfielders, guys that you really like, but like, you know, they weren't quite good enough to make it. You want those on your watch list because it's going to be hard to remember them when they're not appearing in the searches that you do. Mm-hmm. On your waiver wire, and you're going to be heavily biased towards the players that appear at the top of those lists. I know that because I write the batter's box, you know, I used to write it multiple times a week. I'll write it one time a week this coming season. And that's who I'm always asked about, is the guy at the top of whatever Yahoo says is the best player over the last 7 days. And often it's kind of not a guy that's that interesting, but players are biased towards it because he's at the top of that list. So having a watch list helps you filter down who you actually want to care about early on. Like other guys will pop up, but they'll be easy to find. Finding like, oh yeah, what about, you know, a guy we'll talk about a little later, like Jonathan Scope. Mm-hmm. He might not be at the very top of that list because maybe he's like, you know, 2 for 7 over the first couple of games and you already have a second baseman to replace. Like he's not going to appear at the top of the list, but he might be the best player available. So you want to have that watch list. It's just another place to go to real quick of like, oh yeah, I was told to like think about this guy. How's he doing so far? Is this a better pick than the guy at the, like, it gives you easier comparisons to make instead of just, these are all the guys who have the hottest first 5 days of the season. Because a lot of those guys just aren't going to matter long term.
Yeah, yeah. So well, let's get started. We'll start with the first base position. And Scott, if you feel that there's some players that I'm leaving out, you know, bring them up. But some of them might be obvious. But, you know, you got to look at what Bobby Dalbec, first baseman for the Red Sox, has been doing this spring. He's rostered in 42% of Yahoo leagues. We've seen an uptick in his ADP recently. You know, up until the end of February, he was going basically in the 26th round, heating up, and since March 1st, going in the 22nd round, had a nice start to his big league career last season, 8 home runs in his first 80 at-bats, and even batted .263, even though he struck out 42% of the time. Now, in the past, like in his minor league career, he has worked on improving his plate discipline and cut down on his strikeouts from 2018 to 2019. But man, if he could just really get that plate discipline under control with that green monster in Fenway, this guy could easily hit 30-plus home runs.
Yeah, he sure could. But like that thing you're asking him to do with the plate discipline, like we talked about that being an adjustment for a guy with an advanced hit tool like Andrew Vaughn. That's not what Dalbec has. Mm-hmm. Dalbec has advanced power, but not an advanced hit tool. That's my big concern. I think he should be on your watch list if, you know, especially if like you sort of punted first base a little in your draft. But what you're watching for isn't necessarily like the big power. We know he's got it. Even if he doesn't hit a home run in the first week, I'll tell you, Joe's right. He can hit a ton of home runs. Mm-hmm. The problem for me is if he's striking out 40% of the time, you know, right away, that's going to be a big concern because it's going to be hard for him to hit over 200. And especially in a shallower league, like you can find the 25 to 30 home runs without a 200 batting average, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. you know, the more things we're asking Dahlbeck to do for the first time, like control strikeouts in the majors or play a full season and hit a bunch of home runs, like the more times you're asking someone to do something the first time, the more you should kind of slide them down your list a little, because that's risk, right? Like, Bobby Dahlbeck can do that, but he hasn't yet, right? I'm not saying he won't or that it's a long shot. I think he could, right? But I think he could, not that he has. And I, especially in a shallower league, I'm a little more biased towards guys that have done it before, and I just want him to do it again instead of this guy could do it if, right? I'm already putting two conditionals in there. That's a problem.
Great point, but he does have that Hulk smash kind of power. Hulk smash! You mentioned CJ Krohn. And I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on him because we talked about him before. And he really, if you talk about ADP creeping up, you look at this guy, like I said, 26th round he was going in up until the end of February. Now it's the 16th round, rostered in 55% of Yahoo leagues. The only thing is, I mean, do you think we're getting too excited about him playing his home games at Coors Field? I mean, he's another guy with 30 home runs. The projection models, like I said, have him approaching 30 home runs and actually not killing you with a batting average around 270.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing Coors does for him is batting average, right? Because the outfield in Coors is massive, right? It's just so big. And it also makes, you know, breaking balls don't move as hard in Colorado because of the air density. That helps a lot with his batting average. It doesn't actually help that much with home runs, right? Because they've got the humidor and everything there. And it's a huge outfield in Colorado. Like, it actually doesn't help his home runs. I think the two things about Krohn, so I actually ranked him just outside the top 20 at first base, which is, you know, a huge sin for how a lot of people are treating him right now. Two big problems. I don't want to say they're problems with CJ Krohn. The two sort of hesitations I have with CJ Krohn are, one, that the Coors effect goes both ways. He's going to struggle on the road. Right, that's just what happens. All Coors hitters have this. Nolan Arenado had this, and I'll tell you, Nolan Arenado is, you know, three times the hitter that CJ Krohn has ever been.
Sure.
Right, in terms of how, you know, how he can hit for average power and all that stuff. And if it was a struggle for Nolan Arenado, it'll be a struggle for CJ Krohn. Right, durability is the other big issue with CJ Krohn. We've not seen him play 150 games. Just like probably he's out of the works. Probably something more like 130 to 140, I'd project for. And at the end of the day, it's just power, RBI, and a decent batting average. And like, that's good, but I still have 15 first basemen I like better. So he's probably drafted in your leagues if you've already drafted by the time you're listening to this. I think that he's a good first. If you punt first base and decide I want to go after my other positions because I don't like any of the, you know, I don't like any of the first basemen that have showed up when it's my turn to pick, fine. You want to use CJ Krohn as a fallback? I'm all for it. But like, I don't want you to think that you're going to get top 12 value out of CJ Krohn, because that's his absolute ceiling is like a top 12 first baseman. Because while we say that first base isn't super deep, that's because of the names at the top versus the names at like 15, 20, right? But like, he's not going to be a league winner first base, right? Especially now with where he's being drafted. Like, the huge hype was how late he was going. But the hype and the ADP have caught up to each other. So you're paying market right now. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's no longer a like, oh man, I can't believe I'm getting him so late, because you're not getting him that late anymore.
Mm-hmm. Next guy I'll talk about is Rowdy Tellez. Whenever I mention Rowdy, I always think of Rowdy Roddy Piper. I don't know if you're into any old school wrestling there, Scott, but he was Rowdy before Rowdy was cool.
I was Rowdy before Rowdy was cool.
So Rowdy Tellez rostered in 8% of Yahoo leagues. To me, the key with Tellez is whether or not he gets enough at-bats. ADP of 311, 2020 season ended prematurely due to injury. Big-time jump in his contact rate last season. Strikeout rate dropped. I think if he gets enough at-bats, this guy could give you 20 or so home runs. Do you think he gets there?
So I want to see if it's like going to be a pure platoon for him at the DH spot, right? Because, you know, I think early in the season, it might be a little misleading depending on what goes on with Springer, right? So if Springer's not playing early, that lets the Blue Jays put Grychuk in the outfield and gives Tellez sort of like the lion's share of the DH bats, right? So that's cool. And I want to see if he can keep a lot of those gains that we saw back in 2020, right? So like, that's what I'm watching for and why he's on my watch list. But the real thing I want to see is, okay, so now at some point, George Springer is going to be playing full time, right? Now, if Springer, we find out he's out for 2 months, like you can sort of ignore this a little bit. But if Springer's back and Tellez is like in a pure 50-50 timeshare with Grychuk for those DH at bats, I'm out, right? Because I like what he can do. And in like an AL only league or a very, very deep league, I think there still might be some value there. But like in a 12 teamer, a guy can't play part time and be in your starting lineup. And in most 12 teamers, you don't want to use your bench spots on hitters unless you have a whole bunch of them, right? You're going to be using those to stream pitchers for the most part. You don't want more than one hitter. And that hitter that's sitting on your bench should probably be a full-time player, right? A player that you can put in, you know, ideally multiple positions kind of thing. So that's why, you know, he should be on your watch list, because if he's getting a lot of at-bats, he's hitting well, he's going to be, and the Blue Jays will start him over Randall Grychuk at some point, right? If he's doing really well, or giving him at least like most of the at-bats there. But if he's not, like, there's a lot of things that could happen where Tellez doesn't provide the sort of production that we're looking for because he's not playing enough or those gains didn't come back. That's when I'm out.
Great analysis. And we can move on to the second base position. And the first guy I'll talk about, we don't need to spend a lot of time on him, but Gavin Lux, 68% rostered in Yahoo. A lot of hype regarding him as a prospect. So far, hasn't panned out, but showing some good spring numbers. Manager Dave Roberts saying that he's going to get regular playing time. No Enrique Hernandez, no Jock Peterson, so there are at-bats available in that lineup. Upside for this season, 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and that ceiling could rise as his career takes off.
Yeah, I agree. I like Gavin Lux a lot. If you notice, I'm very bullish on him in the pitcher list rankings. I ranked him 13th, right? Like, really high. But part of that is because of the strategy that we decided to go with at pitcher list, which is, you know, at some point in second base, you start to get to a lot of guys who are like the same, who are ho-hum boring. Like, I'd say a guy like Gene Segura, right? Mm-hmm. So Segura is a good player. And in a 15-team league, Segura has a ton of value because he plays a lot. He'll get you double-digit home runs and stolen bases, right? Like, barely double digits, but double digits. Hit for a good average. Like, he's an accumulator. And there's a lot of those at second base, right? So like some other guys that we could talk about in this spot would be like Scope. I like him. Power, but an accumulator, right? Like not a standout player. Mm-hmm. Starlin Castro, going to play a lot, hit in the middle of an order, but not an elite bat, not elite power. He's an accumulator, right? Cesar Hernandez, that's another guy. He's an accumulator. He's very Gene Segura-like, where auction calculators will love him because he's going to get a lot of stats, but like on a per-game basis, Lux is more exciting than all of those guys, right? So we ranked him above there because at the end of the day, if you have Gavin Lux at the end of your bench or is on your watch list, you pick him up, he doesn't do well for 2 weeks, cut him and go get Cesar Hernandez. Cut him and go get Jonathan Scope. They're still out there, right? Like, they're still going to be available. There's going to be a Starlin Castro on your bench that you can replace Lux with if he doesn't pan out. If Lux does pan out, there's not a player of that caliber on your waiver wire.
Right.
That's just not, he's not out there. Right. So I am all about, especially in like a 12 team, like Yahoo league, where it's just second base, no middle infield, do it, take a Gavin Lux, you know, maybe in the later rounds of your draft, or pick him up, have him on the end of your bench. And if after a week or two, he's not really playing, just let him go. Mm-hmm. Right. You won't lose anything. And you can still get one of Scope, Hernandez, or Castro. In a 12 team league, I guarantee it. One of them will be out there unless you're rostering like 40 guys each.
Right.
In a standard 12-team league, at least one, if not all three, will be available. You can go get them later. That's why the watch list is there. You make the watch list because you took some risks in the draft, and if they don't pan out early, you can let them go and go get somebody who's steady Eddie that was going to be there anyway, because nobody in their draft is like, oh man, I'm so pumped, Cesar Hernandez. Like, that's not happening. Not happening. Even the biggest Indians or Cleveland fans aren't that excited about, like, they're not that excited about Cesar Hernandez, right? So just wait. Just wait. Take a Lux, get in on it, and then let the other second baseman just happen. Same for, like, Josh Rojas. A lot of people are excited about Josh Rojas.
Yeah.
I'm not so much. But it's another thing where if you're really into it, take him late in the draft, and if it doesn't work out for 2 weeks, cut him, go get Starlin Castro.
Yeah. Josh Rojas, like you said, a lot of people are into him. 515 ADP. Interesting story, though. He changed the way he prepared for spring training, changed his diet, changed his sleep habits. changed the way he was lifting weights. Like I said, eating better, stopped bringing his phone with him to bed. And he says it's actually helped him. So, you know, comes to think about it, how much of this game is mental? I mean, if you think something as simple as better sleeping habits is going to make you a better baseball player, why not?
I mean, if you've ever had bad sleeping habits and then went to good ones, you're going to know exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah.
If you ate like junk and then stopped eating like junk, you know exactly what he's talking about.
Eat clean,
so,
bro. Cool. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. It's like, cool. You can buy in. And then if it doesn't work out, cut him and pick up Jonathan Scope. Like, that's what I want the takeaway to be here is like, go ahead and take that gamble, knowing that a guy like Scope, Hernandez, or Castro are going to be sitting on the wire to replace him and will give you enough value until you find something better.
Yep, all those are great watch list candidates at the second base position. Move over to shortstop, and we'll talk about your Tigers. Willie Castro, ADP of 250. Interesting. 78% rostered in CBS, only 29% in Yahoo leagues. Good contact hitter from both sides of the plate. Finished fourth in AL Rookie of the Year voting. Batted 349. Going to be some regression there. BABIP was 448, so a little luck there maybe, but Scott, here's a question for the ages when it comes to Willie Castro. Who is he? Is he the guy that should be rostered in 78% of CBS sports leagues, or a guy that should only be rostered in 29% of Yahoo leagues? I mean, who is he?
Who am I is a question for the ages. That's one we're all searching for, to find out who I am, who's in there, who wants to come out and go, hey, I'm hungry.
Can he be both, right? So, like, one of the big differences between these two formats worth pointing out is that most CBS leagues will have a corner and middle infield, and Yahoo leagues won't, like, just based on the standard setups for those two leagues. And Willie Castro is probably third and shortstop eligible in those formats. So he becomes a very useful piece the more starting position you have, because you can put him at middle or corner. You're not probably starting him at third or short, but you can start him at middle or corner. His spring training has been quite hot, right? It's sort of like a continuation of what we saw in 2020. Look, I don't know who this guy is. I love the Tigers. I watched a lot of them. I have no idea which version of the player he is. Like, is he a prospect who like came out in a blazing fireball and then just fizzled out? Like, maybe, right? Did something fundamentally change? Maybe. I don't see it yet. His Statcast data is really weird. I actually compared him in the write-ups to like Luis Arraez, in that he has this like weak power, but he gets this nice expected batting average because he hits these like line, sort of like sometimes softer like line drive sort of things that just keep falling, right? And then occasionally, unlike Arraez, he sprinkles in a bit more power, right? Cool, right? Neat. No idea what he is. I like him again as like a late pick, because there's gonna be some, if you pick him up in a CBS league to be like your corner middle infield and he doesn't work out, guess what? The Scopes, the Hernandezes, the Castros, they're all going to be available. There's going to be other like accumulator, not that interesting shortstops out there, like an Andrelton Simmons, just sitting out there waiting for you to grab them if Castro doesn't pan out. I like taking that gamble. That's an approach I take a lot, because I know that I can get replacement level value for him without paying anything.
Right.
Like, so I'm into that. I mean, that's really the same with two other guys we have on this list that we're going to talk about, Wander Franco and Bobby Witt, right? So less into Bobby Witt, because I just don't see a reason for the Royals to play him.
Right.
I just don't see why they'd bring him up. Like, he could have a great of a spring as they want. They're just going to say he needs more time.
Sure.
He still barely has played in professional ball. Let him go down. Franco, different story. He's played more in the minor leagues. He could very well, like, they thought about bringing him up for the playoffs. They didn't, because nobody wants to debut. I mean, like, players might want to debut in the playoffs, but that's a really bad position to put them in. You can take him, let him sit on your bench for a while. If he doesn't come up, let him go. Let him go and then go pick up somebody else who's going to be around, right? But, like, if you're a big prospect hound, dynasty leagues, he's obviously owned, right? If you've got deep benches, someone's going to draft him. And if you don't, if you really want to be the first one in on Wander Franco, you're a Rays fan, you're a Franco fan, whatever, you can do it. Just be ready to cut bait, right? Because at some point, if your team is suffering, you're going to need that spot. You're going to have to let him go. So only draft him if you're going to be willing to cut him at the end of April if he hasn't played and there's no news that he's coming. So be ready for that.
I'll bring up one other guy at the shortstop position, then we move over to third base. Andrelton Simmons, 374 ADP. He's had health issues over the years, but 162 game average, 10 homers, 10 stolen bases. Just gives you depth. Just keep him on your watch list in case you have some injuries where you need to, you know, replace someone. But let's move on to third base. J.D. Davis, ADP 252. He's going to be third base and outfield eligible in most league formats. Good power, but a career ground ball rate of over 50% might limit his home run production overall. Showed some good on-base percentage skills last season, 13.5% walk rate. What are your thoughts on Davis? Is he a worthwhile guy to have on your watch list? I mean, I don't think he's worthy of an everyday starter anymore, even as a quarter infield.
Yeah, so actually, he's a guy that's interesting because he's been falling down my rankings all offseason. Like, every time the Mets do something, they basically keep bringing in more major league everyday starter capable guys that land on their bench, right? Kevin Pillar, Jonathan VR, like, they're all there. They're just sitting there, and that's going to eat into his playing time. They already weren't, like, they didn't really start him every day until they had to. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't play every day. That really takes him out of consideration as a starting third baseman for me. I don't want a starting third baseman that I'm not totally sure is going to play every day, but he does have decent power. He's always been interesting from a Statcast perspective because he does hit the ball really hard. Again, a guy that you can, I actually like him as like a watch list guy, because I might take a gamble on somebody else and then cut him and kind of hope that a JD Davis type person is out there, which, by the way, there's several, right? Like, mm-hmm. JD Davis doesn't do something special that other guys can't do.
Right.
He's got a bit of power, hits for an okay average, and like, so do a lot of guys at third base. So yeah, you can probably, like, you can spec on him if you want, put him on your watch list if you want, knowing that he's out there, especially if he gets hot. But like, I'm want him on my watch list, not on my draft board.
Right. And you talk about third baseman who could do something special. We could talk quick about John Birdie, ADP 288. Who might not play every day, but he's second base, third base, shortstop, outfield eligible, and he'll actually give you stolen bases, which, let's face it, there's a premium for in fantasy.
Yeah, and it keeps sounding like they want him to play almost every day, like the old Marwin Gonzalez super utility guy that mm-hmm. plays 5 of 6 games a week, right? At different positions every day.
Give somebody a rest, right?
Yeah, and so I like him a lot. The deeper the league, the more John Birdie bumps up my board, right? So like in a 12-team Yahoo league, he's like borderline. Like, he might be that last bench guy, like the one hitter on my bench, because he can fill in at so many places, does something I might need. In like a head-to-head weekly league, I might realize, oh, crap, it's Thursday. I don't have, like, I'm behind 2 or 3 stolen bases. John Birdie stole 4 of them in a game. Granted, it was against the Mets, who weren't stopping anybody in 2019, but, you know, that's a guy who has a real value. He might actually find a way onto your starting lineup, even if you have a good team set up. Like, you might say, like, okay, look, I just need the steals. I need John Birdie in. That's why I like him more than I like a JD Davis as my bench guy. Because, like, how does JD Davis get on my starting lineup? How does that happen? Who does he have to beat? If I've got good outfielders and good third baseman, that never happens. JD Davis never, that never happens. Like, JD Davis will never be ahead of a top 10 third baseman for me, unless like they completely got, like, they got hurt and they're out.
Right.
Right. But there's actually this like reality where it's like, okay, look, I've got like more of a back end starting second baseman who doesn't steal bases, but I need stolen bases. Right. Okay. John Birdie, you're in, right? Like, yeah, it kind of stinks. I'm putting my second baseman, into my utility spot and knocking someone else out of the utility spot to the bench, but I need the stolen bases. There's a reason for me to start him. That's not the case with like a JD Davis. He's doing stuff that a bunch of my guys on my team already do, probably.
This last guy in the third base position will probably gain second base eligibility as well. I find him very intriguing. Jonathan India from the Reds. Reds were tinkering with him, playing some second base this spring, moving Mike Moustakas to third, Eugenio Suarez to short. They've released D. Strange Gordon, leaves a clear path for India to get some regular at-bats at second base. Good college player. 310, 411, 530 slash line, has shown some pop and speed in 2 minor league seasons. Kind of intriguing with this guy. Might turn into an everyday player. You know, if you have a deep enough bench, might be worth a flyer.
The perfect watch league candidate, right? He's on a team who has a gaping hole at shortstop, right? Just big gaping hole. They have not known what they're going to do there. I kept thinking they were going to trade for like Ahmed Rosario or something, because they need a shortstop, and they still don't have one. That's why they're thinking about moving like Eugenio Suarez over. Like, that's why they're playing with some of these ideas. So Jonathan India, probably won't be drafted in most Yahoo leagues, probably, you know, might not even get drafted in like ESPN and CBS style leagues, but he should be on your watch list. Cause if he's playing even three or four times a week, that's a time to scoop him and let him sit. This is actually a well-regarded prospect, a guy who can do a lot of things on the field, a guy that could be a potential difference maker, more likely at like a corner middle infield thing than like a second or third or shortstop kind of guy, but a great guy to put on the watch list because you want to keep an eye on him, even if he's not showing up at the top of your standard waiver wire sort. I want to keep an eye. I want to see if he's playing, how well he's doing. You're going to get, like, you don't need to draft him. That's the thing. You don't need to draft him, so don't, right? Draft the guys you have to draft because they won't be there, but wait on an idiot. Just keep an eye on him, right? If you have really deep benches, sure, I can see why you draft him because then he might get drafted in your league, but like in a normal Yahoo, he won't be. Right? Like, if I'm wrong, like, let me know, but he's not going to be drafted. So put him on the watch list and just be ready to pounce if he's playing a lot. You know, almost immediately, go ahead and spec on that.
Yep, I agree with you. And we could just move on to the outfield position real quick. David Peralta, Corey Dickerson. Peralta's rostered in 29% of Yahoo leagues. Dickerson's rostered in 4% of Yahoo leagues. Steamer has Peralta for 267, 18 home runs. Dickerson, 265 and 19 home runs. You might not draft these guys, especially if you're playing in a Yahoo league where you're only starting three outfielders. But a couple of guys that should be on your watch list just in case you need to replace an outfielder due to an injury.
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to use this little segment to talk about strategy approaches in three versus five outfielder leagues because these play a lot differently than you might think, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you haven't played both of them enough. A five outfield league, Corey Dickerson, David Peralta become a lot more valuable because, especially if you're in like a 15 teamer, but even like a 12 teamer, you're talking 60 starting outfielders, right? And it's probably going to be more like 70 because a lot of these outfield eligible guys will be starting at other positions for a lot of people. I'm thinking like Cody Bellinger might be someone's first baseman. So that takes away an outfielder. So you're talking like 65 deep. Outfield gets real thin by that point. Replacement level drops significantly. So you like a guy like Corey Dickerson because you don't need to replace him. He does not hurt you. He offers some decent batting average, hits in the middle of the order. He can accumulate. And I've used this word a couple times because accumulators are valuable in deep leagues. They are not that valuable in a Yahoo three outfield league, right? They simply because they're not lifting you above your competition. They're just keeping you probably slightly below them. That's when I want to gamble a little. Like, what if David Dahl bounces back, right? That's the guy I want on my watch list or at the end of my bench or as my last outfielder because, one, I can just cut him and replace him with someone like a Corey Dickerson or a David Peralta, or if not one of those two specifically, one of the dozen other outfielders that'll be out there because 3 times 12 is only 36. Even if you're generous, you bump it up to like 45. If you go to the rankings, the 45th outfielder is a lot better than the 7th one. Right? Like there's several tiers in between those, right? Several, like a lot of different expectations. So in the shallower format, I'm actually attacking guys who might be able to do something special. If I'm in an OBP league, Jesse Winker, right? He's a guy that we get excited about him every spring and he's disappointed us pretty much every time since then. But if you want to jump back on that train, go ahead. This is the time of year when he's exciting. And if he does pan out, like we keep hoping, he's a big time difference maker in OBP leagues. He hits for an okay average as well. He's got some pop. He can do some special stuff, right? Christian Pache and Manny Margot, right? Like there's not a ton of power there, but both those guys can steal bags. Pache is a little different. He's probably going to play every day. Margot probably won't, but they can steal a bunch of bags. They could end up being very valuable pieces. And if they're not, drop them. You can get the accumulator later. In the deeper leagues, like Pache is sort of still valuable because you might need those stolen bases. And that's the one thing he's going to do. But he's probably a little lower on my board than like a Corey Dickerson because I need five guys who I really actually want to start in the outfield. And Pache could very well be someone I don't want to start, even though he's stealing, because the bat skills aren't spectacular, right? I like him as a potential Rookie of the Year candidate, but I need him to hit first. His glove is amazing. He's going to play every day, but he might not hit very well, and that's going to really hurt you in fantasy. So But I like taking those gambles in the shallow leagues. And then the deeper leagues, it's more like, okay, I'll go get Corey Dickerson. Like, I like Corey Dickerson. I got nothing against him. My boy Yancey Eaton loved Corey Dickerson back in the day. I like what he can do in a deep league. I just don't need to roster him in a three outfield league. because I can get someone more exciting who will produce a similar stat line because there's just more outfield available. You can stream outfielders in a three outfield format. In a five, that's a lot more difficult. So you really want established players at least like four positions deep. If you want to stream the fifth, maybe go ahead. It's just going to be a little painful at times.
Yeah, and you mentioned Manny Margot. Steamer has him projected for 18 stolen bases, and he's not going to kill your batting average either, only rostered in 50% of Yahoo leagues. But definitely great analysis describing the difference between leagues where you start three or five outfielders. So we talked at the start of the show that we're going to talk about positional players that should be on your watch list. So the last position that we'll talk about is catcher real quick. And for me, you know, Wilson Ramos, Tigers, Alejandro Kirk for the Blue Jays. I have a sneaky suspicion by the end of the season he might be the starting catcher over in Toronto. And you wonder if the Orioles might, by the end of the season, bring up Adley Rutschman. It's still questionable, but they feel maybe just keep an eye out for him.
Sure, right? Sure. So here's the thing with catcher. In a single catcher league, you are not using a bench spot on catcher.
No.
In a two catcher league, you're not using a bench spot on catcher, right? So if there's another catcher you're interested in, they're on your watch list. Just put them there.
Yes.
Keep an eye on them, right? And then you can cut as you want. If you are intentionally streaming the catcher position, it is really helpful to have a couple guys on your watch list. And also checking out the article that we do over at Pitcher List every week about catchers to stream, because you're going to do a lot of like matchup stuff, right? So like a guy that stands out is like Elias Diaz, who's over in Colorado.
Yeah.
I think they're going to platoon the catchers a little bit in Colorado, but if he's got a homestand and his platoon is the one that's going to get the most action that week, that's a great stream, right? He can make a difference for you that week, and then you cut him for someone else the next week. The guys that you might watch list as someone who could be an actual difference maker full season, you know, maybe Wilson Ramos, he might find something again. Alejandro Kirk is another one. Some people are drafting him as a starting catcher. I don't like that because it's hard enough to get production from catcher from full-time starters, right? It's really hard for platoon guys, so you need him to win that job, but he could be interesting, right? And, you know, you mentioned Adley Rutschman. That's a decent one. I like what he might be able to do. But otherwise, like, I'm not really watchlisting a ton of catchers. I mean, maybe like Omar Narvaez just to see if anything comes back.
Right.
And if it doesn't, like, you just take him off your watch list, right? Because you're not gonna stash any of these guys. You're not stashing catchers. I repeat,
you're not stashing catchers. You're absolutely
just watch list
right.
them and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Go ahead. You wanna watch list Joey Bart because when he comes up, you think maybe he'll get more playing time because Buster Posey might be hurt again, like surprise, surprise. Sure, go ahead. But for God's sake, watch list him. Don't actually add the guy until it's actually happening. It's okay to miss some of these guys on catcher. Right, it's okay because you can stream a replacement level catcher at all times. Right, we've written this article for a couple of years. We're pretty good at it. You can stream catchers all the time and get the 15th ish value at catcher. It's not that hard. You just play matchups because the 15th catcher is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like that's just how it works out. So something worth doing. Yeah, watch list. I mean, honestly, watch list whoever you want. You want to watch list Dalton Varsho? In case you call him up, sure. Go ahead. Whatever you want to do. I will never get mad at you for watchlisting a catcher, right? I'll get mad at you if you add him and you're not gonna play him. He's sitting on your bench. Like, there's certainly a better player for your bench than your backup catcher, but you're probably not gonna start anyway.
Great stuff, great analysis as always from Scott. And that's it for today, right? I wanna thank you for allowing us to visit with you. We hope that you were informed and entertained because that's our goal. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Galina, follow Scott at If the Chew Fits, follow the podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL, and you can also follow at Pitcher List Pods, and you'll be informed anytime a new episode drops for any of the great podcasts that are on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And I want you to subscribe to Hacks and Jacks on Apple Podcasts, and if you can, leave us a stellar 5-star review. As always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. Good luck with your remaining drafts. Enjoy opening day, and we'll see you next time.